Well, hey, today we're going to be in Genesis chapter 50. If you guys want to open up there, we're going to be finishing the whole book of Genesis today. Right? Incredible. We've been in it for like a year. It's been a marathon. And I remember when we were like praying about starting it, we're like, man, this is going to be a long, long journey. And it has been. It's been a very long journey, but hopefully it's been fruitful and it's been encouraging to you. Right? If we just stop for a second and think about it, a lot of Christians are like, man, the New Testament is about Jesus, but the Old Testament is like for the Jews. I don't really get it. Right? So we've learned about Adam and creation, and Adam was created to have relationship with mankind and failed in sin, and Jesus is actually called the second Adam. Okay, so Jesus fulfills that perfectly. He is the perfect relationship and image of God bearer that comes to mankind. So we already see a Jesus parallel right there. And if we get into like the creation story, the fall of man, and the serpent and the heel, there's so much Jesus there. Then we get into the story of Noah's ark, and Noah builds an ark, and he rises above the waters, and anyone who came into the ark was saved, and anybody who didn't come into the ark had to meet their fate and destruction, right? And it's this biblical telling of the gospel of Jesus saying, all of you who come to me will be saved, and those who don't come to me will not be saved. So he's just welcoming everybody in. Right, and then later we get into the story of Abraham, who walked by faith, and it was accounted to him as righteousness. So it's incredible because we go on this 2,000-year journey of Moses and the law, and people thinking that the law will save them. Once Jesus comes and once Paul starts preaching to the churches, he says it was actually Abraham who was saved by faith. It's the faith of Abraham that saves you, not the law of Moses. It's never been about how hard you work to earn your salvation. It's about having faith like Abraham. Then we get the child of promise, Isaac, who is this promised child who's going to bear the seed of the Messiah. And then Jesus ultimately ends up being that promised child, right? Another Jesus reference. Then we get Isaac's son, Jacob, who literally wrestles with God in the flesh. There's this person of Jesus, this representation of Jesus, whether it was him or just God in the flesh, right? Wrestles with Jacob, changes his name to Israel, and then he goes on to have 12 sons who will then represent him to the world. Then we get Joseph, and if we just get into Joseph for a moment, Jacob's son, this is now Abraham's great-grandson. He represented Jesus in so many ways. He was rejected by his brothers, rejected by his own. He was sold for some silver. He ends up going and redeeming all of Egypt, which was the known world, and all of Israel. He saves them all in one fell swoop, and he saves them by giving them bread. And Jesus says, I am the bread of life. Right? Like, how powerful is this? This is crazy. How much Jesus we've just walked through in the Old Testament, just in the book of Genesis. Jesus is on every single page. And if you don't see Jesus as a fulfillment of all this, you're just missing it. You're blind, right? Because it's there every page. We're not even in Exodus yet. And then Leviticus, the law, Jesus comes and he just is an embodiment and fulfillment of the law. I mean, every single book of the Old Testament is just saying, Jesus is coming. Wait, Jesus is coming. Hey, this is something that's kind of like Jesus and how he's going to be, but Jesus is going to be even better. Just wait and see. And then Jesus comes in the Gospels. And then after that, they're like, remember how great Jesus was? Be like him. It's either pointing forward to him, or it's him, or it's pointing backwards to him, or it's pointing to his return. It's all about Jesus. And if you guys are reading the Bible and you're missing Jesus, you're missing the point. He's always the point of the scriptures, right? So today we're going to be talking about life and death. We're going to be talking about all these different things in the scriptures. And I want to open up by saying this. I've talked about this a lot, and you can kind of tell what I'm rabbit trailing into based on what my like Facebook or Instagram reels look like, right? So if you just were to open up my Facebook right now and scroll through it, you'd be like, why are there so many like lawns and lawn care things? You know, it's so random, but Stanley, who comes up here and leads worship, is like, dude, you got to follow this lawn page. It's called Southern Lawn Syndicate. And I was like, okay, I'll follow it. And now I'm learning about like nitrogen in my soil and phosphorus and aeration and why core aeration is better than just spike, you know, and all these different things. And I'm like, I'm outside. Like, I went from being young and like ambitious and like talking colleges and like dating Brianna and like thinking about the future to now I'm like leaning over and like pulling out weeds and going, I think I saw some seeds fall down. I'm wondering if I should be pulling these weeds or just leaving them, spraying them. Like my brain is just completely gone. I'm like, I'm 36, almost 37. And all of a sudden I care about my lawn way more than I ever thought I would. You know, it just happened overnight. My favorite page is called Bermuda Lawn Dominators. It's so good. If you guys just, you know, follow, a little plug right there. But I will say, growing up in Southern California, we don't have seasons. We don't have cycles. It's just like spring all the time. You know, it's like 70 degrees almost all year round. Like it gets down to 55 and people are frozen, right? And then it gets up to like 90 and people are like, this is the worst. And like it's so temperate and the same all the time. None of the trees die. Everything's just the same. It's almost like you live in like this Pleasantville place, right? Like everything, it's called coastal sage scrub. It's like these coastal plants that are there, or cacti. And it's just everything kind of is the same all year round. So you never really get to see cycles. And so coming out here, you get to really see like, look at these trees. They bloom and they get beautiful and there's white flowers. Then the flowers start to fall and then just the green leaves stay. And then at the end of the season, a fall comes and all the green leaves fall and it just looks like a dead tree for a few months. And then the flowers come back and they bloom. And I'm like, this is beautiful. This is incredible. I understand why. I mean, obviously the allergies also come and the heat and the freezingness and the fact that it's 38 degrees right now and it's April. I mean, you know, you take what you get. But I will say, I feel like Texas, at least where we are here in McKinney, represents some biblical parallels a lot better than San Diego does, because that's not real life, you know? It's not a real place. It's like the promised land over there, but it also not in a lot of ways, you know? We won't get into it. Okay, Genesis chapter 50. I want to talk about that. We'll come back to that life cycle of life and death, but right here we see Jacob passing away. Okay, so Joseph and his 11 brothers are going to mourn their father's death here. So let's read this. Genesis 50, verse 1. Then Joseph fell on his father's face and wept over him and kissed him. And Joseph commanded his servants, the physicians, to embalm his father. So the physicians embalmed Israel. 40 days were required of him, for such are the days required of those who are embalmed. And the Egyptians mourned him 70 days. Now when the days of his mourning were past, Joseph spoke to the household of Pharaoh, saying, if now I have found favor in your eyes, please speak in the hearing of Pharaoh, saying, my father made me swear, saying, behold, I am dying in my grave, which I dug for myself in the land of Canaan. There you shall bury me. Now, therefore, please let me go up and bury my father, and I will come back. And Pharaoh said, go up and bury your father as he made you swear. So Joseph went up to bury his father, and with him went all of his servants of Pharaoh, the elders of his house, and all the elders of the land of Egypt, as well as all the house of Joseph, his brothers, and his father's house. Only their little ones, their flocks, and their herds were left in the land of Goshen. And when they came up, both chariots and horsemen, and it was a very great gathering. Then they came to the threshing floor of Etad, which is beyond the Jordan, and they mourned there with a great and very solemn lamentation. He observed 7 days of mourning for his father. And when the inhabitants of the land, the Canaanites, saw the mourning at the threshing floor of Etad, they said, there is a deep mourning of the Egyptians. Therefore, its name was called Abel Mizraim, which is beyond the Jordan. So his sons did for him just as he had commanded them, for his sons carried him to the land of Canaan and buried him in the cave of the field of Machpelah before Mamre, which Abraham bought from the field from the Ephron the Hittite as a burial place. And after he had buried his father, Joseph returned to Egypt, he and his brothers and all who went up to bury his father. Okay, so I want to talk about this for just a moment. This is Jacob's burial, and this is a very elaborate and detailed burial for scripture. Okay, a lot of times when people die, like, it was really sad, but when they were traveling and Rachel died, they're like, and Rachel died on the way and they buried her, like, along the way. They just buried her on the, like, on the side of the road somewhere, you know? And then it was Leah who actually got buried with Jacob in this field that they had purchased in Canaan. Now remember, Canaan is the promised land. This is the place that Moses tries to take the children of Israel to. It ends up becoming the land of Israel, okay? So it's this promised place that God is saying, this is where I want you to be. This is where I want your ancestors to be. This is your land, okay? But I want to stop here for a moment and recognize that the Egyptians helped them mourn the death of Jacob. This is pretty important. The Egyptians actually came around and said, we care about Joseph so much and the impact that he made in Egypt. We are actually going to mourn alongside you. And the Egyptians mourned for 70 days for Jacob. And I'll say one thing I don't think we necessarily do well as a culture, at least as an American culture, is we don't necessarily mourn well. I think it's internalized, and a lot of times we don't know how to necessarily let it out and express that. But there was an entire culture and community that all came together and helped mourn. And they all said, let's do it together as a family, as a community. Let's all travel together. They were eating food together. I'm sure they were telling stories, and they came together and they mourned for 70 days. And then they went together to do the burial. And I feel like this is such an elaborate and detailed burial, not because Jacob was more important than Abraham or Isaac or anybody else, but Jacob, this represents the end of an era and the beginning of a new era. Okay, Jacob, when Jacob dies, he leaves behind his 12 sons, which are the 12 sons of Israel. His name's also Israel. So now we get into the beginning of Israel. Really, it starts the whole process of Israel as a nation, because now these 12 sons take ownership over each having a tribe. Tribe of Reuben, tribe of Benjamin, tribe of Gad, right? All these different tribes that are together. And it's interesting because oftentimes death represents something new, a new season. Death represents new life. And that's where we get into the cycle, right? When you see the Bermuda grass die, okay, you know that it's going to go dormant for a little while, and then that you actually got to scalp it down as low as you possibly can, then the sun comes out and new life comes, brand new life. Jesus actually talks about this. He doesn't specifically talk about Bermuda grass, okay? But in John chapter 12, verse 23, it says, Jesus answered them and saying, the hour has come that the Son of Man should be glorified. Most assuredly, I say to you, unless a grain of wheat falls into the ground and dies, it remains alone. But if it dies, it produces much grain. So it's Jesus is talking about how we actually have to die to ourselves in order to have new life. If you guys want to be a Christian and represent Jesus, it's not going to be through your flesh. It's not going to be through who you are. It's going to be through who Jesus is. And the only way you're going to be who Jesus is and be like Christ is if you allow the parts of yourself to die that you've taken so much pride in. I had a conversation with a buddy the other day, and we were talking about how, like, growing up in San Diego, like, yeah, we used to get in fights and stuff, you know, like, we were hard and we were tough, like, you're joking around, right? But, like, it's easy to take pride in those things, and we both kind of joked about it, like, there was a time where we took pride in that. But, like, as a Christian, there's no pride taken in violence. There's no pride taken in revenge or anger. That's not actually something to celebrate. We have to let those pieces of us die, the old self that we had, so that we could become who Christ has in and through us. And I want to encourage you guys too. That's a basic principle of life. Like, oftentimes there's a death that happens, whether that's physically, spiritually, emotionally, relationally, career-wise. Something happens where there's something that ends a season, and it actually gives birth to a new season. And oftentimes we look and we mourn and we're so sad and we're frustrated about that thing that ended that we're not even looking for what God has for us instead. You can stay at a job that you don't like for 30 years. Or you can get fired or quit and feel like I've lost this thing that was so important to me. And then God opens up a new door and you're like, why did I stay there so long? These things are so much better now. But yet oftentimes we don't look at what God has for us, right? Like there's that classic meme. I wish I would have put it up on the screen, but it's like Jesus, and he's got a giant stuffed animal behind his back, and there's a little, maybe 2-3-year-old girl who has a tiny little stuffed animal, the same one, but it's tiny, and Jesus is asking her for it, right? And she doesn't see what he has behind his back, but if she would just trust and say, okay, you can have it, and hand it to him, he would be like, boom, check that out. I got this big one for you, you know? It's like, ah! You know, screaming. Like, you can imagine. And I want to encourage you all with this. Like, there may be something in your life you're currently going through that feels like death. But oftentimes God needs that grain of wheat to die so something can grow. Right? So be aware, be present, be looking for it. Because if something's dying in your life, instead of you have two choices. Either you could wallow in it, or you can say, all right, God, what are you doing? What are you doing? Because I know how you work, Lord. It goes death, life, death, life, death, life. So where's the life? Where's it coming? I'm going to be looking for it, Lord. That's the way we could look at it, right? The ultimate example of this is Jesus did not bring salvation to the world through life. He brought it through death and life. Right? You guys notice that? We're about to get into Palm Sunday next week and then Easter the next week. Jesus had to die on the cross to bring salvation to mankind. He had to. Death had to happen for the ultimate gift of life to be given, right? So be looking for that, okay? Let's move on to verse 15. This is kind of funny. Joseph's brothers are always all over the place, and we get to see it here. So when Joseph's brother saw that their father was dead, they said, "Perhaps Joseph will hate us and may actually repay us for all the evil which we've done to him." So they sent messengers to Joseph saying, "Before your father died, he commanded, saying, 'Thus you shall say to Joseph, I beg you, please forgive the trespass of your brothers and their sin for the evil they did to you. Now, please forgive the trespass of your servants of your God, of your father.' And Joseph wept when they spoke to him. Then his brothers also went and fell down before his face, and they said, 'Behold, we are your servants.' Joseph said to them, 'Do not be afraid, for am I in the place of God? But as for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good in order to bring about it as this day to save many people alive. Now, therefore, do not be afraid. I will provide for you and your little ones.' And he comforted them and spoke kindly to them." Now, I can imagine Joseph being frustrated at this because he's like, "Guys, you guys threw me in a pit. You sold me into slavery. I had to, for 22 years, I was on my own in Egypt, had to figure all these things out on my own. Finally, I bring you guys back in. I bless you guys with bread, land. I take care of you guys. I've done everything for you guys. And now that my father's dead, you come to me and you say, 'Maybe now I'm going to get my revenge on you.' Do you guys not know my character? I've represented myself to you so well, and now you guys are going to actually think that little of me." I can imagine how frustrated he probably was, but it said he just wept because he was sad. And he was just like, "Man, that's so unfortunate." I don't even know if the brothers were telling the truth when they said, "Hey, Dad made you promise that you would forgive us." Like, I don't even know if that was true or not. The brothers might have just been making that up because they were scared. You have to remember, Joseph was a prominent man in Egypt. He was second to Pharaoh. He could just say, "All right, all my brothers, take them out. Off with their heads." And Pharaoh would have been like, "At your word, Joseph, let's do it," right? Like, it would have been simple. But Joseph was recognizing that that's not how he wanted to conduct himself. If anything, Joseph constantly represents Jesus in his life, and here he's extending mercy and grace. Okay, like I said, we're going to move on. If you guys read on, okay, and you jump into Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, the rest of the first five books of the Bible, it's all about Moses, and it's all about the law that's given to the children of Israel. And there's this idea of retribution and getting even and justice that's in the law. Okay, and before that, the law was ever given, Joseph probably had every right to get even with his brothers, but instead, he goes, "No, I'm going to extend grace and I'm going to extend mercy." He extends the love of Christ to his brothers. And I love this too. Joseph understood something greater than revenge. He says here, I love this verse. He says, "Am I in the place of God?" He goes, "Am I in the place of God?" He goes, "Justice is the Lord's. Justice is the Lord's." How often have you been burned? Has somebody stabbed you in the back and you want them to just pay for it, right? You want them to get it so bad. And the Lord is like, "I got it. I got it. Don't worry about it," right? I think of like how much peace can you have if you say the retribution is of the Lord, justice is the Lord's. I'm going to sleep at night well because God's going to deal with that person. That's what Joseph's heart was. I met with a guy for coffee this week. His name's Jim. And he was talking to me and he's like, "You know, what's the root of all sin?" He asked me that question. And I've heard it said, there's like one of two answers, okay, that I feel like are like pretty solid answers. There may be more too, I mean, out there. Does anyone want to take a crack at it? Does anybody have like one word that you're like, "This is the root of all sin"? I'm going to call you out. Pride? Okay, anyone else? What is it? Ungratefulness? Okay, so pride is one of them, okay? That's what Jimmy said. I heard a professor once say that selfishness is at the root of all sin. Because that makes sense, right? Like, every single act that you do that's for self and not for others, can be a sinful act. At the root of each sin, whether it's lust, greed, doesn't matter what it is, there's a selfish motive there, right? But Jimmy said it was pride, and his argument was, he said, in Genesis 3, when the fall happens and the serpent comes and deceives Eve, he says this, "You will not surely die, for God knows that in the day that you eat it, your eyes will be open and you will be like God, knowing good and evil." So what he was saying is, he said, you know what, you will be like God and you will be able to administer justice. You will be able to determine what is good and what is bad. And that's that pride in our hearts. I know what's right. I know what's wrong. I'm going to administer justice on the things that I believe are wrong. And I'm going to take pride in the things that I think are right, that I'm doing. And Joseph goes, I'm not in the place of God. I'm not like the serpent. I'm not like Eve. I'm not like Adam. I'm recognizing that justice is God's. So if you guys, if my 11 brothers are wicked dudes and they need some justice on them, let it be. Let God deal with it. I'm going to have peace in it, right? There's another thing that Joseph understood here, and this is awesome. This was written a couple thousand years later, but I think Joseph understood this so well. And this is actually the verse that Leah was singing today. Romans 8:28 says, "And we know that all things work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to his purpose." Joseph says, you guys meant evil against me, but God meant it for good. You guys wanted to destroy me. God wanted to save you. And so God worked it out, and God worked all things together for good for those who loved him and according to his purposes, right? And who are called according to his purposes. And I think if you live your life like this, where you say, God's going to take care of the justice, and if something bad happens to me, God will work it together for good. If that's your mindset, how can you be depressed? How can you be defeated? How can you be down? Well, if someone's bitter and someone stabs me in the back, God's going to take care of them. And you just kind of laugh about it and be like, Lord, have mercy on them. You know, that's your prayer now, because you're like, God's justice is going to be way worse than mine. And then when something bad is happening in your life, you're like, God's going to work it all together for good, because I love him and I'm called according to his purposes. So let it be. I'm not worried about it. But instead of taking it all on your shoulders and saying, how can I control the outcome? You're not in the place of God. You can't control the outcome. God controls the outcome. So you say, God, it's yours. I'm submitting it all to you, and I'm going to have peace because I have control of nothing. You're going to work it all out. So you work hard as unto the Lord. You honor him. You do everything that you can in your power, and you submit the rest to him. Whatever's not in your control, say, Lord, it's yours. You've got it, right? My brothers, I have three older brothers, and they used to make fun of me all the time. We all roast each other, right? Like, all in love, right? But like, they even had friends that would come over. We'd all roast each other. We'd make fun of each other. If you had any physical difference and you didn't look like exactly like Henry Cavill, like if you ew, anything off, you were just destroyed and roasted for it, right? And I remember like my brothers used to say that my nose is a sundial, and that if I go outside, I can always tell what time it is, right? All I got to do is like face north, and then like wherever the shadows cast, that's what time it is, right? We used to destroy each other, but what's ended up happening is like, if anyone in this room tries to make fun of me, I'm like, okay, like I haven't heard that before. You know, like it has zero effect on me. You know what I mean? Like that move has no effect. And that's just kind of how it goes. And I feel like we can get to that place in our lives when it comes to trials. You literally can get to that place where you're like, oh, another trial? Man, last time there was a trial, look at how good God was and what came out of it. And so as you're walking into a trial, you're like, big deal, sundial nose, like whatever. Like I could take way worse than that. Like there was a guy named Luciano, and we used to make fun of each other. Luciano, yeah. And we have a Luciano. Luciano, and he was an Italian guy too. And we used to just, when we'd see each other, we'd do that. And that was our nose, right? Like it started like this, but that wasn't big enough. So we would do this, and that was our nose. We used to make fun of each other. But I'm telling you, if somebody, you get to a point where you just start saying, all right, Lord, what are you teaching me? I'm in a trial, Lord, what are you teaching me? Man, this person seems like they're out to get me. Lord, work in their heart whatever needs to be done. Help me to just have humility and patience. And it just doesn't affect you as much anymore, right? And you just start growing. But unfortunately, he typically grows us through giving us more of those things. And through more trials. So just know that the Lord, the same way we see those seasons, the dead grass, the new grass, the dead grass, the new grass, the dead grass, the new grass, like sin, that's why I wasn't growing in my faith in San Diego, right? You need the death, you need the growth. And out here, I'm telling you, you're going to go through trials. You're going to go through ups and downs. People think, I'm going to give my life to Jesus, and I'm going to start coming to church, and I'm going to go to Bible study, and then it's going to just be up and to the right. No. The up and to the right is up and to the right if you were to, like, average it out. But it's like this. You know what I mean? It's like this. And it goes up, right? But sometimes you feel like you're lower than you were 6 weeks ago. But then the Lord's like, now I got something new for you. And if you just commit yourself to the process of growth, you'd be surprised by how much you will grow in your faith. But if you're in a trial and you're just wallowing like, Lord, why have you forsaken me? Where are you? You know what I mean? Then the Lord's just going to be like, oh, ye of little faith. You know, he'll get you out of it, put you right back in it again 6 weeks from now. But if you say, Lord, what are you teaching me? How can I grow? You're going to grow in your faith, and it's going to be incredible watching what he does. Okay, now we're going to read a few more verses, and then we'll take communion together. It sounds like these guys are already playing some crazy games. That's good. So let's go verse 22. So Joseph dwelt in Egypt, he and his father's household, and Joseph lived 110 years. Joseph saw Ephraim's children to the third generation. The children of Machir, the son of Manasseh, were all brought up on Joseph's knees. And Joseph said to his brethren, I am dying. But God will surely visit you and bring you out of this land, the land he swore to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. Then Joseph took an oath from the children of Israel, saying, God will surely visit you, and you shall carry up my bones from here. So Joseph died, being 110 years old, and they embalmed him, and he was put in a coffin in Egypt. So within this chapter, we see death, we see life, then we see death again. We see Jacob die, and then several years later, we see Joseph die, okay? And when Joseph dies, they say that he was able to raise up his great-great-grandchildren on his knees. That's pretty cool, right? Like, that's the blessing that Joseph got, I believe, for his lifestyle, is that the Lord was like, you're going to raise up your great-great-grandchildren on your knees. What a beautiful way to put it, I think. You know, you can imagine him sitting in a rocking chair and just, like, having his little great-grandbabies, his great-great-grandbabies on his knees. So beautiful to see, right? And he dies this honorable death, but he gives this promise, and this had to have been from the Lord, because he says, don't worry, the Lord will surely come visit you, and you will carry my bones out of here, back to Canaan. It's kind of weird, right? Joseph's buried in Egypt because he lived most of his life in Egypt. Okay, that made sense. But Joseph never made this pact or promise that he had to, like Jacob did, where it's like, carry my bones back to Canaan. No, he was Pharaoh's right-hand man. He needed to be buried in Egypt. But the crazy thing is that they were in a favorable position with Egypt. Things were good. But they're about to enter into 400 years of slavery in Egypt. The Egyptians are going to turn on them. And things are going to be real bad. But they're going to hang on to this promise that Joseph gives right here. Don't worry, God will come visit you, and you'll carry my bones out of here. That's pretty cool, right? One day, you'll be able to have so much authority that you'll be able to dig the bones out of the ground, carry them out, and go back to Canaan. So Moses comes. You guys know the story. Plagues happen. He leads them out through the Red Sea. Moses wanders in the wilderness, and he says, he strikes the rock a bunch of times, and the Lord's like, Moses, you're not bringing these children in. This generation's not going in. The next generation's going in through this man named Joshua. Joshua leads the children of Israel into the promised land, slay a bunch of people, take a bunch of land, and then as Joshua is about to die, this verse comes, Joshua 24:32. The bones of Joseph, which the children of Israel had brought up out of Egypt, they buried at Shechem in the plot of ground which Jacob had bought from the sons of Hamor, the father of Shechem, for 100 pieces of silver, which had become an inheritance to the children of Joseph. So we see after Jacob goes, takes the promised land. It belongs to the children of Israel. They go get Joseph's bones, and they bring it back to fulfill this prophecy right here. But it took about 470 years. His bones were in the ground in Egypt for over 470 years before that happened. Sometimes God gives us a promise. It doesn't happen overnight. Sometimes it takes some time. I'm not going to go so super deep into that one, but last point before we close out. There's this really cool parallel between Egypt being like the world and the promised land being like heaven. Okay, they're in Egypt. They're in captivity. They feel like they don't belong there. They're in somebody else's land, right? We are not of this world. We don't even belong here on this planet. Like, what are we doing here? Feels like everything's just rotten and falling apart, and politics are all over the place, and health is all over the place. And we're like, one day we're destined to be somewhere else. It's going to be greater for us. And that's how the children of Israel felt being in Egypt. They're like, we don't belong here. We're being treated poorly. We're struggling. We're striving. We feel like servants here. But one day we'll be in the promised land. It's a land flowing with milk and honey. The strawberries are like the size of cantaloupes. You know what I mean? This place is going to be fantastic. We're going to love it. And I want to encourage you all not to get comfortable in this world. Not to get too comfortable. Okay? Romans 12:2 says, be not conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is the good and acceptable, perfect will of God. When I say don't get too comfortable in this world, here's what I mean. I know there's times where I get so into my own schedule and my own rhythm and my own routine that if I'm just doing something simple, like I'm going to go to the coffee shop and try to get some work done, if I'm not focused on the Lord, I can be frustrated that it's taking me so long to get out of the house. Right? And Brianna goes, hey, can you help get Elijah ready? Because he's got to go to class. And I'm like, fine, sure, whatever. And then I'm frustrated with Brianna because she's asking me to do things when I'm trying to get out because I'm trying to get on schedule. And then finally I get out of the house and then I'm driving and I'm frustrated that cars are cutting me off and that people are driving slow and I'm stuck in a one-lane road behind a truck. You know what I mean? And it's just like everything's frustrating. And then I get to the place. There's a long line to get coffee. There's no tables available at Collective, right? Like we all know. There's not one table and you're frustrated and you're just like, and I'm at Collective in the first place when Filtered's closed, you know what I mean? Because they're remodeling and like the whole, everything's falling apart. When in reality, nothing's falling apart. But if I wake up and I focus on the Lord, I'm like, how can I serve my family? Every inconvenience to Jesus was like an opportunity to serve somebody and to love somebody. There was never an inconvenience. It was like he's walking and people are like, oh, Jesus is so awesome. Tell us, teach us more, teach us more. And some lady grabs his robe and then they're like, get away from him, unclean, get away. And he's like, no, hold on a second. Somebody touch me. And he stops and he blesses this woman. He heals this woman and takes her on to the next part of her journey, right? He stops, just completely stops what he's doing and blesses somebody else, right? As I'm driving, someone cuts me off and I'm like, man, that person's probably got a lot of anger in their heart, you know? And it's like, I could pray for that person. I get to the coffee shop, there's a long line. It's like, man, I got an opportunity to just like wait and talk and maybe now a table open up while I'm in this long line. You know what I mean? Like different mindset. Simple, right? Isn't it so easy? There's been only a couple times since we've been out here in Texas that God has just been like, stop. Don't be you anymore. Listen to me and do exactly what I say. One of the times was when we were doing, some of you guys remember, we were doing church at the park. It was outdoors. And we're like, woo, yeah, some of you guys were there, all five of you that were there. Church at the park, and it was cool. We were just doing church outdoors, you know, for the 2 months in Texas you can do it. And then there was a guy that was, like, walking around, and he was, like, with his daughter, and I'm, like, cool-looking guy. I'm, like, I just kind of walked past him, and the Lord's like, you should talk to that person. And I'm, like, no, Lord, not so. And I just kind of kept walking, you know. And then as I was walking back, the Lord's like, last chance, talk to this guy. And I came back and I talked to him, and his name's Joey, and he attended our church for a while. And I remember talking to Joey, and Joey's like, man, well, yeah, we don't really have a church we're going to. We haven't really gotten connected here. And I'm like, dude, you should come to our church. And I'm like, what do you do for work? He's like, oh, I do construction. I remodel. I do whatever. I said, dude, are you trying to remodel a church? We just got this building, and we need walls put in. He's like, dude, I'm on it. And we were like in the struggling talking to contractors. Every contractor was 3 to 4 months out, and Joey's like, I'll do it tomorrow. I'm like, let's go. So he came in, gave me a great price, built the church out. He ended up inviting Morgan and Gatlin to church because they were friends with Morgan and Gatlin. Then Morgan and Gatlin ended up inviting the Spears and then the other Spears. And then because of the Spears, we met Noah and Lacey. And because, like, I'm telling you, like, half our church is because I talked to Joey. You know what I mean? And I'm like, the Lord was like, talk to this guy. I'm like, okay, fine, you know? And finally I did it. Like, it was super awkward and bold. Like, I had to be super bold to do it. It wasn't even that big of a deal. But you know how it is, just talking to some random person. But sometimes the Lord is like, quit being so in this world. Get out of it. Stop focusing on what's comfortable for you. Stop focusing on what is inconveniencing you. Just stop for a second and do what I say. That grain of wheat's got to die. That part of you that's like nervous, insecure, worried, anxious. Sometimes God's like, all right, I'm taking the wheel. I'm taking over. It's not you anymore. It's me. And he just does it. And you get to see the work. I mean, I have a couple more stories I can share about how crazy it is of what God has done. Hopefully we all can share those stories, you know, eventually about all these times that God has worked in and through us. But I'm telling you, if he's going to do it, it's going to be uncomfortable, but you die a little bit and God grows up a little bit in and through you. It's incredible. So with that being said, I want us to pray, and then we're just going to take a moment and we're going to do communion. So if you want to come up after I pray, either side, grab the communion elements and we'll go back to our chairs and take it together. Okay. Father God, thank you so much for your love for us. Thank you so much for this life cycle, these seasons that we go through. God, I know that probably half the church right now is in a season of blessing, and about half the church right now is in a season of trial. But God, I know that those who are in the season of trial, God, you have blessings for them. And God, those who are in a season of blessing, you got trials for them. And Lord, I just pray that we wouldn't see you as loving or caring based on whether or not we're in a blessing season or a trial season. But God, we would just always see you as loving and caring. Because regardless of what kind of season we are in, we know that you are working in and through us. So Father, I pray that we would just take that. We would just learn from that. And God, we would constantly be asking you, God, what are you teaching me? And Father, that we would be able to put ourselves aside more and more. God, that we would be able to just put our flesh aside, put our worries aside, put our anxiety aside, put our insecurities aside, put our whatever it is, our sinful nature aside, God, and we would be able to walk in the Spirit as you guide and lead us. So Father, we just pray for your blessing, your Spirit, to guide each and every person who's here today. And we pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.